Welcome to Discovery's podcast. We're glad you're joining us today. If you'd like to know more about us, you can check out our website, dc2.me, or follow along on our socials. And now, here is this week's sermon.
Well, good morning, Discovery. My name is Zach. I'm one of the pastors here and delighted to bring our teaching for the day. We are beginning a special time of year here, not just at Discovery. We're jump-starting a little bit. We're 2 weeks early to the season of Advent. But we like talking about it now for a couple reasons. One, because of a lot of the work that we get to do with our local and global partners and just wanting to make sure there's ample opportunity to share that work with all of us. But also because Advent can sometimes sneak up on you. If you've practiced this before, all of a sudden you're like, oh, it's December, it's started. And you haven't even had time to wrap your head around it. And as we dive into this season this year, we thought it would be great to spend some time. We've been in a lot of the Old Testament this year. We spent some time in Leviticus this summer, summer's hottest read. We just came out of Zechariah. Let's start the book of John. And in fact, if we're going to do the book of John, what if through Advent, instead of covering three chapters at a time like we sometimes do when we're studying a book of the Bible, something like that, what if we covered like a verse at a time and slowed our pace and really were deliberate in our walkthrough? And so today, our teaching is rooted in John chapter 1, just the first half of verse 1. Four words is our sermon today, and it goes like this. In the beginning was. What do you think of when I say the phrase, we have to get ready for company coming over? Do you have anything feelings-wise that pops up? For me, it's sheer terror. Most of this started when I was a kid, and it's not because I don't like people or I have issues with that, but it's because with my mom, when we were little, it was usually followed by statements of, so here's everybody's jobs to do because we got to clean up the house. And there was all kinds of stuff, but it was always just an anxiety-driven time until company got there, and then it's like, go put on nice clothes and smile. And then it was like, okay, that part's done. And so we, cleaned the house inside and out. My favorite job when we had company coming over became over time picking up the dog poop in the backyard. My parents had gotten this Chinese Sharpei black lab mix, so body of a lab but face of a Sharpei, if you can picture this, which you probably can't. Its name was Wrinkles. He was a hilarious dog. But Wrinkles had some weird proclivities. We learned when we were little that he would eat crayons if we left them out. And I didn't know this till later in life, but even then, I was a colorblind kid. And so when it was time to go pick up dog poop, my brother and I started to realize, oh, when he's been eating crayons, it's really easy to find all the dog poop. And my mom would yell at us all the time for missing all the dog poop, which now I know, Mom, it's brown poop and brown grass. I can't see it because I'm colorblind. But if we can feed the dog crayons, I can do my job. So before I continue in the story, I just want you to know now as an adult man, getting ready to share this story in front of a room full of people, I'm like, did we poison our dog with crayons? And I learned, crayons are totally safe for dogs. So kids in the room, take notes. We've stumbled upon a genius idea. Particularly for me, if you could give them the blue ones or the yellow ones, those are colors that I can see. It was just like these little neon signs popping out of the grass, like here's where dog poop is. It made it so much easier. But there were these phases when we'd come through with cleaning. The other job that I hated was the bathrooms, and I didn't know that toilet wands existed till college. My mom was old school, man, elbow grease and get all the way down in there. Like the Clorox will clean it off of you too type of mentality. We cleaned this house when we had company coming over. And I kind of find that there's three phases of cleaning up when you're preparing for company to come over. One is that you pick up. I was the oldest of four. We had laundry on our couch in our living room 24/7. It just never got off, constant laundry. But when there was company coming over, get the clothes off the couch. But then it did move into phase two, which is, just picking up is good. We got all the plates off the dining table, but the peanut butter and jelly that's stuck to the surface of the table, we've now got to get that off. So phase one, pick up. Phase two, clean up. Phase three, and this especially as you become more of an adult, becomes more and more the thing you get the most excited about. Set the table. Make the grocery list. Prepare for the people to come. And as a kid, our job was always set the table, and we would hope that we had enough clean knives coming out of the dishwasher that we could actually set them all. But when that was done, it was usually followed by the phrase, go get dressed, prepare, company is getting ready to pull into the driveway. Only when all of those things are ready could you actually get there. And best case scenario, if you waited too long to start your preparation for company coming over, best case was that like you took all the laundry and you shoved it in the linen closet and one of your guests like opened that up and got buried. Like that, best case. Worst case scenario is that you get caught with your house looking like the property manager's like animal from the Muppets or something like that. Like when people are just horribly uncomfortable the whole time they're there. I think it was this kind of wisdom of like companies coming over that prompted the early church fathers to encourage people to practice this idea that we call Advent. And if you're new to this, Advent is one of these seasons that we have in the church. And a lot of high churches are who we're inheriting this from. But Advent is this practice that starting on December 1st, going all the way through Christmas Day, we're just preparing for the coming of Jesus. And it's a special time. Literally, if you look at the church calendar, we are just starting to finish up something called ordinary time. It's just normal days. But starting on December 1st, high church, it's Advent. It's a special time. You shift your posture a little bit. There's something more to do. We got to start picking up the dog poop. We got to start cleaning the toilets, get the jelly off the table, set the table. Something's about to happen. We have a guest coming for a visit. It's time to prepare. And if you knew that Jesus, like the Jesus, was the guest who is going to be coming to your house in about a month, I don't know about you, but right away, my mind goes straight to the menu. What are we going to serve? Like, what's the best thing I've made in the last like decade? Like, that's what we've got to have. Who else would I like to come? If he's going to be coming over to our house, friends, coworkers, like who else do I want to just be around him if he's going to be with me? I'd start to remind my kids about manners, starting about a month out, that Oaks can't eat baked potatoes with his bare hands, just like an animal. And my wife, for sure, she's going to like lovingly encouraging us to start tidying up and assigning jobs because we're not going to wait until the day of. We're going to start now so that everything's ready and we're not stress cases by the time that he's here. And to give us enough heads up, by the time that Jesus rolls in, we've got RSVPs from our friends and family, we've got enough wine glasses for everyone, probably even some new clothes if we're like really on our game. But if we're really going to go for the gold, if Jesus is the guest that we're expecting to see, we're not just encouraging each other to clean up the outsides of our house. It's not just the surfaces in the yard. It's Jesus, like the Jesus. And so I start to wonder, what about my insides? What's going on in here that maybe I would want to consider? How do I pick that up? What's there that should not be there? What's happening in my life that he'd be saddened by if he saw that I didn't make some extra effort? And I just want to be so clear. I don't think that Jesus shows up and he's like, I'll stay longer or I'll love you better depending on how clean things are. I think that his posture is, I'm delighted to be with you no matter what, period. So this invitation to clean is actually more for my benefit than it is for his, but it is still for my benefit. If he's coming, what's in here that I just don't think belongs, that needs to be put away, it needs to be cleaned up? And for those in the room today that are just checking out the claims of Jesus, but even for those that would say, I am following him, this all may sound kind of funny if you've never practiced something like Advent before, but this is the essence, I think, of Christian spirituality. We celebrate a spiritual world by doing physical things. Christianity loves to sit at this cross section that the spiritual and the physical are not these dislocated different experiences, but that we are physical and spiritual beings. And so to practice a physical practice of Advent is a spiritual practice of Advent. We don't practice Advent to earn more from God, but we do it to respond to him. He's coming for a visit. We want to honor him by being ready. And to call it practicing Advent, I think this is an appropriate word. It's a trial run. This is a rehearsal for the real thing, because one day Jesus will come back to this earth and the question I think will be, will we have been caught preparing for him to be here with intention? Or will we just find ourselves as being lazily distracted? And what would you rather be? Before we get into our teaching, there's also one more practice I'll be reminding us of as we're going through Advent, and it's actually one more gift that church history has to offer us. Last year here at Discovery, we began introducing this idea of Christmastide. And if you've ever heard the song, The 12 Days of Christmas, this is Christmastide. It's like maniacal to think we're going to spend 25 days preparing for a guest to come, and it's going to be like one meal, one day, one moment of presence under the tree, and then on to December 26th, it's over with. The gift of Advent, to practice this physically and spiritually, is, we just spent so much time. The church would say, take 12 days to just have him be in your home. It's a slumber party. He's staying with you. His presence is with you for days. And again, it's just a practice run. But it's playing out a drama that's happening all the time and is about to happen. Christmastide is this important invitation. We've spent all this time preparing. Now let's enjoy it. Let's enjoy his presence. So as we dig more into our text for today, let the question in your heart and your mind and your soul be, how would you like to prepare for his coming and his presence this year? Let's jump into our very short text, John 1, 1a. In the beginning was. First of all, if you were in the first century or second century and you were in a bookstore and you were just looking around, you'd probably start finding this book by finding its chapter on the spine of the book. And there you would read the Gospel of John, which to us we're like, yeah, that's Bible talk. Like that's a book of the Bible. If you're in the second century, particularly near the Roman Empire, those are loaded words, the Gospel of John. This word gospel, this is the word that the Romans would use when they were getting close to taking over a new town as they were like pushing out their empire. They would send a messenger ahead, and this messenger would announce to the town, hey, we have some good news. We're taking over. All of the roads that we have, all the academic spinal column that we have, the government that we have, this way of doing life that we have, good news. We've come to fix you, which if you're being invaded is like, what? Like, go away. Like, you don't, this is not good news. And this gospel idea comes loaded with this intent of, I have something that can fix you. So take that as you will, but if you're going to use that word to start the title, you're already a bit cheeky if you're John. Like, you're choosing that word of all the words. And John's title reads, this book will tell you how to live. That's really what you're seeing on the spine. In tradition, church history, John's gospel was probably the last one written. John is older at this point in his life, and we just know from watching the life of John, this dude spent time in Jerusalem for a long time after Jesus ascended. He spent a lot of time planting churches and being part of this church movement that was brand new, that was infiltrating the entire world as gospel. He's wise. He's old. And this old, wizened man is sitting down, putting pen to paper for the first time, going, what do people need to know? His audience would seem to be not just Jewish people, but also Greek people, which read in his context, what should I write to the entire world? No big deal. And he's not just trying to convey history, like, what does this mean? He's trying to communicate theology. If Jesus is God, then what did he want us to know? There's a big clue in why he wrote this book that we will keep coming back to. It's at the very end of the book, John 20, verse 31. He says this, he doesn't just want his reader, aka you, to know more stuff about Jesus. He says this, but these are written, all of these stories, this whole gospel, all of this is written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing, you may have life in his name. He's writing to change your life. Belief, this word that John is using is the Greek word pisteuo. More simply than saying just to, like, I hope that you believe that this is true. He's not just saying, I want you to assent to a set of beliefs. This word really comes down to, I want you to change your reality. The thing that you trust in, this is at the root of this word, pisteuo. Put your trust in this story. your whole life reorients. That's why I'm writing these stories for you. I believe that Napoleon was real. I hope I'm not in the minority in that in this room, but it doesn't change my life. I mean, not in my day-to-day. I'm not reorienting a lot of how I brush my teeth in the morning because Napoleon's real. John wrote this so that my life would be changed, that I would commit my trust, that I would reorient my life to this Jesus character. And then he begins, as he's thinking through, what's my epic opening statement? He chooses a really odd beginning. In the beginning was. And I think this is a highly suspicious way to start something if you want to be taken seriously. There was a news article that I read this week. It actually popped up in a few different places in my feed. I don't know what this says about me. But that the first kiss, scientists have nailed down that the first kiss happened about 16 million years ago. Which I think if you're hearing that news, hopefully you're responding somewhat like I did. Like, hey, why do I care about that? Why should they care about that, these scientists? But how could they possibly know? Was there like some kiss cam that was going on way back then? Like, who were these folks? You weren't there. Like, at best, I mean, then you start reading the article and they're like, well, it's a range, like 16 million to 21 million. It's like, well, that's one way to hedge your bets. But even that, it's like, says who? And it's good evolutionary science, a really interesting article. Obviously, it's complex stuff that goes into trying to even nail down something like this. But how do you know? What's the point of knowing that? And I think that for John is a massive risk that he's taking. He's going to say, in the beginning, I know what happened, however many millions or whatever years ago. I'm not going to bet my life on the fact that 16 million years ago, the first kiss happened. It seems foolhardy. I would dare to say the scientists, if you ask them, like, give me the year, they'd be like, no way. But John is asking me to bet my life on the fact that he actually does know where it all came from. Risky move, bro. He wasn't there. John wasn't. The only way he could have known is if he talked to somebody who was there, and it seems like it was probably a pretty small crowd. Like, what you're saying is impossible unless you talked. Which maybe this is the genius of John. He's going, I have news that'll change your life if you read the title. How do I want to begin? Let's see. Oh yeah, I know God. Like, the audacity of this guy. And also, for some of the folks in his crowd who are Jewish, they're seeing these first lines. And if you've been around church much, you've heard this a million times. If you're new, this may be just a mind-blowing thing that John's plagiarizing, actually. He's stealing from the first verse of the Bible, Genesis 1:1. The whole book opens with this fantastic scene. It says this, just the first verse. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, dot, dot, dot. And it'll go on to explain all the things that God makes in this first beginning of the world. But John begins not with in the beginning when God. He starts with in the beginning was. Was is a word that addresses some kind of a noun. Genesis is starting with in the beginning when God created. It's setting you up for, we're going to talk about all the things that God did, what God is doing. But John says, well, I'm actually not interested in conveying what God is doing. I want to tell you the was. I want to tell you who God is. He wants to tell us not about his doing, but his being. And according to this creation narrative, there was really only one before there was time, before creation. There was just God. And this God, he begins our part of the story in Genesis by creating out of nothing, ordering life, putting things in their right places for life to flourish. He begins with the sun and the moon. Science tells us that even like the teensiest fractions of percents, one way or the other, we either burn up or we freeze to death. So God's got to hang this on the pegboard just right. He picks the right spot. Eventually, he gets to the sea and the land and the animals and then human beings. Everything is in its place. And this is so hard for us to imagine because we've only caught glimpses and shadows of it so far. But the order and the location and the placement and the systems, they're perfect and they're new. not just new because it's day one, but they're new because they're constantly being regenerated to life. Death doesn't exist here. Pain doesn't exist here. They don't even make sense. And this new thing that he has made, we would probably look at it and we would use the word perfect. He liked the word good, and he liked using it in the fullest sense of the word good. Everything was whole. So John begins by saying, I'm here to fix you. I've got this gospel for us. It will bring order to your life. To get things started, let me introduce to you the main character, someone who makes new and perfect things. It's kind of what he does. But if you're going to make a statement like in the beginning, you're effectively communicating, I talked with God about this. So where did he get his intel? And that's something for the coming weeks. Keep coming back. But all of this brings us back to this idea of Advent. As my mom starts yelling at us as kids to start picking up and cleaning up and setting the table, for who? Who is this that's coming over? And today we get this first clue. We're getting the house ready. We're getting ourselves ready for someone who makes new and good and whole things. And if I may, could I invite us just to take a moment to, let's just assume that this is true, whether you're a follower of Jesus or not, that just holding space for this idea, just for a second, that just perhaps the God who created perfect creation was coming to your home in about a month for a good couple weeks stay. Really sit with that. What would you do? What would you think? What do you feel at the mere thought? And it's in this space that you begin to experience in yourself Advent. Would you like your Christmas this year to be meaningful? Not just some event surrounded by hectic chaos, but something that you go, in my soul there is peace. In my soul there is connection to something purposeful. I celebrated the real thing and not the facade that our culture loves to smear over the top of this holiday. Perhaps I could encourage you to think through a couple ideas if this Advent thing is something you'd like to engage. The first is this. Pick up the laundry. It's everywhere. Where is there sin in your life? Advent's a time to start feeding your dog crayons, like right now. If I can be so bold, put away the crap. We all have plenty of laundry strewn all over our houses. None of us are perfect, me included. And while we aren't preparing for a guest who wants us to practice behavior modification, we do have one who wants us to experience freedom. And I don't know about you, but I'm way happier with a tidied up house than a cluttered one. It's not just for the benefit of the one coming. It's actually more for me. And I think this is one I want to be so careful with. Like, a lot of us are wrestling with addiction. A lot of us are wrestling with stuff that the thought of, like, pick up the laundry. Are you freaking serious? Like, I've got really heavy and hard stuff. What are the things that can be moved? What are the things that just can draw your attention enough that when he walks through the door, you can say, look, there's that pile. I did my best. He's not looking for perfect people. He's just looking for people who want to welcome him in. Where are you welcoming him? Second thought, clean up. Practice holiness. Live rightly. It's one thing to pick up the table. It's another thing to wipe off the jelly and the peanut butter. But that's actually a much different practice than picking up, then pursuing cleaning up, doing things that are right. What might living with a sense of holiness look like through this 25 days that are coming up? Not in a condescending sense of like, how can I make myself feel better than everyone else around me? But with a sense of, I'm set apart. I'm different. I'm living differently. Is this seeking to intentionally live with more grace and forgiveness for people around you? Is it that? Is it having a heart to mend broken relationships? It is that time of year. Maybe this comes in the form of spending more time in scripture or spiritual rhythms or even engaging some justice work in our community. What do you do to clean up? And finally, what do you do to set the table, to prepare for relationship? Oh man, get excited for this part of the preparation. If he can really make new and good and perfect things out of nothing, surely he can just fix the broken things. There's even more to work with there. What in your life, if he sat down at your table, would you say, can you fix this? I've got some things in my life, they are jacked. Can you mend me? Can you mend us? Can you heal our world? What are the things that you'd want to ask him about in that conversation? Are there things he's wanting to ask you about? How do you prepare for the guest who is coming? What conversations do you think of? And if I could just drill down and get extra practical for us as we're preparing. One thing that's so fun about this picking up metaphor is like it didn't start day one. Usually, especially like my wife, God bless her, she's the best. It will start with a list. It'll be a list like a couple weeks out of like, here's all the things we're going to have to do. Then comes the time to start doing them. We're 2 weeks away from Advent. Now's the time to make the list. What are we going to be doing? So that then when we get to December 1st, bam, here we go into Advent. A couple practical ideas. To engage your head and your heart. A lot of us around here love the app Lectio 365. Lectio 365 will just, every year they engage Advent. This is something that you can do in quick bites if you're like, I'm new to this whole spiritual rhythms thing. It's also something that with what they give you, you could sit with it easily for a couple hours and not be done. Maybe check out that app. Every week here at Discovery, if you're on our email list, you'll be getting the weekly updates that we do, but attached to that will be a simple guide that really comes from Kate Bowler's A Good Enough Advent or Christmastide. If you want to engage those emails and go through those practices, you could also, if you like that, she's incredible. You could just get her devotional book. It'll take you through all 40 days of Advent and Christmas, and she's a delightful writer. If you're wanting something a little more meaty and daily, I can't recommend highly enough the Biola Advent Devotional. This will also take you all the way through Christmastide, but every morning in your inbox, you get a piece of music, a piece of poetry, a piece of art, a scripture, and a devotional written by one of their staff. What might be things for you, if it's not on this list, that you go, how do I gauge my head and my heart in this season? And what about your hands? This is one thing that I've done for the first time, I think, in my whole life this year. I decorated my house. I've done that before. Here's what was different. I decorated it with intention. I decorated it with the idea of, I have a guest that's coming. Last night at about 10:15, I was hanging the star on our Christmas tree. We just set that up early. I'll apologize later. That should happen after Thanksgiving, I know. But hanging the star up on the tree, I just found myself thinking of Jesus going, oh, if he were here, I'm going to have to make sure it's straight at some point, but like, I want it to be straight now. And I found myself stepping back from the tree after hanging all the lights on it, going, does it look right? Like, if Jesus was here, would I be really proud? What about decorating your home this year with a mindset of, he's going to be here, he's going to see it? And not out of like a guilty or panic, like, oh, everything's got to, like, we got to control the heck out of this thing, but just out of a, like, I hope he likes it. What's the point of decorating anyway if it's not for the people who are hosting to enjoy? Allow him to be a guest in your decorated home. You walk past him on your way in the lobby coming in here today, but the tags that support our local and global partners, it's not just another place to give money, but it's a practice of, this is how I prepare for Jesus to come and stay with me. This is in that holiness lane, but also veering into that relational one. What does it look like to live and practice generosity in this time? And maybe you are considering an ongoing commitment, not just to serve at a shelter or a nonprofit once in this season, but with an ongoing posture of his presence. How am I preparing with my life for him to be here? And again, as you consider this practice of Advent, this practice run includes celebrating his coming and his presence. Advent and Christmastide, and that, should you choose, you will get to have those 12 days of uniquely asking him questions in a special time, listening as he asks some of his own, and maybe in the mystery of it all, something new and good begins in you and in your home and in our world. Maybe it will be what you asked for. Maybe it will be something surprising you didn't know you needed. But this house guest has a long track record of being a gift giver, and I highly doubt that he's going to come visiting for 12 days without a housewarming gift or two. So as you're preparing for him, I feel very confident in telling you, he's preparing for you as well. As we wrap up our teaching today, I want to invite our ushers to begin passing our communion elements. This idea of a house guest who makes things new. I think if you were to look Jesus in the eye and you were to say, well, what's the recipe? How do you make things new? He would smile and say, well, there's really two ingredients and then one tool that you need to make all things new. The ingredients would be these, a piece of bread and some wine. And the tool is this, mix them in your belly. I am the essence of life, Jesus would say. I am making all things new. And if you seek wholeness and goodness and newness, it begins with me in you. As we pass out these elements for communion, we would love for everyone to receive these with us. We would just ask that you consider what this means. That receiving these elements is a confession of, I want to begin learning and listening. I want to continue on this journey of knowing this Jesus who is the framework of life. This God of the universe chose to enter into our broken world and begin the process of setting it right and healing it, a renovation from within. He's the model we seek to follow. And the ceremony of communion is simply an outward expression of saying yes to his way of life. If you're willing to consider that and move towards that today, we'd love to celebrate together. As you hold these elements, we'll wait for everybody to receive them. Perhaps you sit with a question, how do I want to prepare for the coming of this guest?